all were active Bentley supporters in 1970. But there were some Sioux people there too, and it wasn't a problem. The factionalism in the Georgia Republican Party is much more pivoted around Bo Calloway and Annie Calloway people.
Well, wasn't that to some extent reflected in the Bentley situation?
It was a minor factor. Because the break there was between Calloway with the Columbus base, the 3rd District, 2nd District, that area, and a Macon-Savannah coalition. And that's not where Suit won the election. You had Oliver Bateman and Wiley Wasden, who was then state chairman, and Paul Jones of the Suit deal. You had Calloway and the other members of the party in the other. And so it really had no effect as far as the voting of the primary was concerned. Now, still some problems, some factional problems in the party on that basis. But it's not as, since Calloway became secretary.
How about though insofar as actually recruiting Suit to run?
Well, it didn't create a long-lasting problem in the party. You know, I think Bentley would have had a better chance to win, far better chance to win than Suit. He may even have beaten Jimmy Carter. I don't know, because I left the state that year before the primary to run a campaign in Virginia. So I wasn't here when the race was actually going on, but that much detail. But
were you involved in the Virginia governor's race last year?
Yeah.
Godwin Joyce. How do you assess that one? What were the turning points in it?
Well, I think the program we brought in from the RNC is what won the campaign. We brought in a telephone program, brought in 7 field men from all over the country, began hammering away at Howell and sold the busing thing. At the rate they were going, I don't believe they would ever have hung the busing tag on Howell. And he had no way, there was no identity or communication between the different units up there in terms of keeping the campaign going with any sort of momentum. There was a lot of resentment, especially over in the 9th district and in the 6th district, the lower part of the valley area, because Godwin was not a Republican. And you had a lot of Republicans that either didn't vote, or I think a lot of them voted for Howell. And
There's a certain amount of conventional political wisdom in Virginia that Howell's release of his poll in September mobilized the Godwin people, and that was a big factor in generating, getting them off the stick and really moving. Is that true, or
not
is that coincidental?
Not entirely. A number of things happened about that time. I think Howell made a very bad tactical mistake at that time when he found he was 13 points ahead, because he began backing off to play safe. At the same time, coincidental that, I think the poll did hike up some Republicans. But the problem within the Republican Party was there was no real central threat. There was no way you could mobilize the party really at that time. It had no, without a field staff, there was no way of making sure that Waynesboro.
The field staff, you think, came in at that time.
Yeah, right.
What caused them to come in? How did it happen?
Went in there the last week in September and got with Kenny Kling and Dick Obenshain.
How did you happen to get in there? I mean, did the Republican National Committee ask you to come up?
The committee was ready to throw up its hands. Said, I don't think we can do anything in Virginia. And I said, you do that, we're going to lose the South. There's no reason why going back where I've been coming from. Besides that, they were either going to send me into Virginia or New Jersey, and I sure as hell didn't want to go to New Jersey. So I made myself a volunteer as much as anything. I knew Virginia, and I had a good relationship with Obenshain and Kling. The timing was right also. The day I got there, Kling had just realized they were going down the tube. So he and I devised a plan that called for bringing in field men, knowing it was too late to train any. We would have to bring in people that already had experience. I was going to use whoever I could pull out of Georgia to work with me in the Thompson race. We had a couple of people in Virginia that had fairly good credentials. I'm going to put out a call through the committee for anybody else we could get. We got the go-ahead from Obenshain and the committee and Ed DeBolt, who was, of course, running the George Young thing there, the next morning. And spent the weekend designing a program, which the heart of which was the telephone canvas using a professional telephone firm, NTA. And at the same time, putting together a surrogate program to begin attacking Howell, because the Godwin people weren't effectively doing that. They were putting out press releases that were 6 pages long. And, you know, that's a bunch of crap. Also, they'd mentioned busing one day. You get back to them about really pressing Howell on the busing thing, and they said, "Well, we did that last week." You know, it just wasn't really getting the job done. So, from Kenneth Robinson's staff, we borrowed Betty Burkholder to schedule the surrogates. We got marshaled as many of the congressmen as we could. We set up an overall PR attack on Howell, attacking basically, as I remember, on, I think there were 3 issues we were going to try to hit: busing, the infusion of labor professionals in the COPE, had 12 field men in the Northern Virginia area alone. We were going to try to run against COPE in the 14B thing. And then against Howell's large expenditures of money. Virginia is not for sale. And using those three things, Robinson was the best congressman in terms of carrying the attack. But we had the Congressional Committee film news releases from the congressman, those who would attack him. We coordinated that with Radio Actualities. It was sent out, and of course written releases in their area. And wanted to make it not look like a giant conspiracy against Henry Howell, so we kept the congressman fairly localized. Betty got a lot of state senators, some of whom were Democrats, that were backing Godwin, to do things like get on these telephone-in interview shows on a lot of the small local radio stations. Obenshain became a hatchet man, and we really started hitting Howell with anything we could find. When Howell came up with one of our polls, for example, we had tried to create a major controversy about who stole the poll, and we had cartoons and so forth. We began putting together a series of throwaways, pamphlets on busing and everything else, and, you know, openly, blatantly prejudicial material. We referred to as voter information documents. I think they're called smear sheets some places. But, I mean, reprinted newspaper articles. I'm not talking about Segretti type stuff. I'm talking about factual material. But driving a point home, you know, do one on gun control, which we had to use in the 9th District area, but didn't want to use in Northern Virginia. Busing we used especially in Norfolk and so forth. Norfolk and Alexandria and Arlington and the Virginia and the Richmond suburbs where they had the marriage thing. So this was, of course, part of the Fieldman's operation also. Meantime, we're putting the telephone deal together based on trying to canvass and turn out the vote by telephones in 7 central population centers in the state, which is where we put the field men. We didn't try to hit all the counties, obviously. We just tried to concentrate on these 7 key areas. The committee had done a prioritizing deal, sort of a PIPS program for the Virginia Party, and we used that to pull off the top 1 million households, 1 million voters, excuse me, in the state. And that's what we tried to count. We canvassed that 1 million about as effectively as we could, about 236,000 telephone calls, I believe, for a canvass. Then we had, of course, it was also up to Kling and me to find some way to finance it. And that's where the real problems arose, because we put the thing together totally separate from the Godwin campaign. And the thing was, we can't get them to make a decision. So we're running our own show. If they don't like it, it's too damn bad. We're going to take it and go with it. And I don't think Godwin ever knew I was in there. He may have seen me around the headquarters someday, but I spent as little time in Godwin headquarters as possible. And we ran the whole thing out of state headquarters upstairs. They did finally give us, the Godwin campaign did finally pay off the remaining amount of whatever the budget was. I mean, I think it's been about $58,000 on the program entirely. We had trouble raising money in NTA. The professional telephone was pulled out after about a week and a half of calling. And we had to send the field men back in there then to try to put our own paid telephone program together, which we did.
Did the Howell, release the Howell poll, open up the money for Godwin?
It may have downstairs. It didn't where we were.
Did you get any money from Republican National Headquarters for the campaign?
Nothing significant. I think we got a I think we got a $3,000 contribution, and my reason for being reluctant, I'm not sure. I was never quite clear. It was just argued for some time whether it came into our operation or went downstairs directly to the Godwin thing. I heard both, and I was mad as hell when I first heard about it because I thought it had gone down there, but it may have ended up in our telephone operation. I'm not sure how that. Kenny Kling or Dick Openshane would have a far better deal. They just finished an analysis precinct by precinct up there, and of those precincts in which we made the telephone calls and those we didn't within the same jurisdiction, and consistently the turnout was 15 to 20% higher in our precincts than were in the others. So when you win by 15,000 votes, but I think without the other stuff, without attacking Howell, without laying the busing deal on him, I don't believe that would have worked. It took more than just telephoning, obviously. But the other thing we did also, I think was key, was Pat Echols' campaign was floundering, and he was not that good a candidate. He was running for attorney general. Echols had floor managed the anti-busing bill when he and Howell and the state sent it together. So I sat down with his campaign manager, who was pretty good, sharp voice with the miniatures office now, Steve Bell. And we decided the only emotion that Echols could create would be Henry Howell. So he took out after Howell. And Steve wrote some damn strong radio spots that attacking Howell on busing. They were gutsy. And WMAL and one other station up there refused to run them because they got some complaints from Howell people. Well, once they did that, we had an FCC complaint. And we went to court, held news conferences, and we had a very emotional meeting in Richmond where Openshane or someone got up in front of all these people from all over the state and said, you know, they print the vilest rumors about Spiro Agnew. They won't even print the truth about Henry Howell. You know, take these tapes back to Stanley, Virginia, and use your egg and butter money to make sure the truth about Henry Howell and Pat Echols gets on your radio station. And it worked great. People were that was the first time, I think, that I perceived any real emotion getting into the campaign. You know, they had something to shout about them, that the damned Washington news media is being unfair. And they grabbed up the tapes and went scurrying back home, and they began popping up over the state. And on Wednesday, Spiro Agnew resigned, and they started coming off on the state. But I think we continued to use Echols as a club against Howell. And that worked well because his opponent, Andrew Miller, was about like, said, Bowen and Reuben Askew are. You know, we could charge him with the most ridiculous thing at 10:30 in the morning in a news conference, and he'd be back answering it that afternoon. And, you know, he was climbing the wall. Pat Echols had been a really heavyweight candidate. Miller could have been in serious trouble. I think the input that Echols made in attacking Howell was a distinct benefit.
Did the people in the senatorial congressional committees, the Republican Governors Association, the National Committee, see the South somewhat in the same terms as you do in terms of opportunity the next 10 years?
I've never discussed it in that term. I would think they would.
Well, do they apportion their resources that way? I mean, does this region get more field men and more resources than the other regions? You know?
We're spread too thinly as it is. And we don't have about 6 field men, period. And of course, this has been a strange year also for lots of reasons. We've had to throw a lot into special elections. I came on in June after the Virginia convention, and I'd been on the job about 2 weeks before they threw me in the Maryland special election, the first district, the Bob Bauman race. And I went to that in the first part of July. And I was gone on that until August. I got out of there on August the 21st, and before I spent more than a couple of weeks, and I was back in the Virginia thing, so I was gone. Same thing has happened to Bill Royal, for example, who has Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia and North Carolina. This area. He also has West Virginia and Maryland. Yes, I got to do it somewhere. Anyway, Bill hadn't been in his state since before the Godwin race. He got out of the Godwin race, and they sent him into Michigan or Pennsylvania or both in Cincinnati, and he just got out of this last Michigan race just a couple of weeks ago. So he hadn't been in his area at all. Of course, Tennessee apparently has an excellent program start from top to bottom. I think Ron Riadol generally is considered to be the best executive director in the country. He's head of the Executive Directors Association, whatever informal group they've got. And you know, he seems to be way above average. And I gather that the governor is a lot more cooperative in terms of helping the party than some of the people we have in office. And I think I get the impression that Tennessee is extremely strong from any standpoint as far as...
Is there any effort now to coordinate, say, dispensing of resources other than field men? I mean, does the Republican Governors Association, is it talking at all now with the campaign committees on the Hill about who's going to get money and how much?
Oh, I don't know. Now, you have to talk with the folks up there. I'm not even...
But they have still have their own distinct programs.
Yeah. The part that's combined is what we do out in the field. Now, when I go in and I file a report on the Florida governor's race, it goes to Jim Steiner or Jim Galbraith. It looks like, as I said a while ago, it looks like right now I'm going to end up having to spend a lot of time helping to run the Florida governor's race. But at the same time, I'm going to also be spending a lot of time in the 7th District congressional race in Georgia.
But you're an employee of the committee.
Right.
The national committee.
In that Virginia race, do you know how they get that, how Frank McGee got that thing on Election Day morning?
No, but that's one of the few things I ever enjoyed from Frank McGee. He made up for it by not even announcing we'd won 2 days later.
No, I don't. But I think probably...
And how people thought that was, you know, devastating to
them. I'm sure it was. But I think that probably was
that
just...
That was when McGee said how Henry Howe's an advocate of busing. That was about it.
Well, that's what we'd been saying for 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I think different really when y'all said it and Frank McGee
well,
said
but,
it.
Well, but I think what led NBC to have that impression was the fact that we sold that idea. It was infinitely saleable situation. We had it on tape. There was no doubting that Howell was pro-busing. There was no arguing that point. The facts were there from any reasonable judgment. And I don't think Frank McGee certainly went out to help Mills Godwin. I'd have expected the help to have been the other way around.
Who's running Westmoreland's campaign?
The new campaign manager just announced 2 weeks ago is Dick Edwards, former news director for WIS-TV.
How many professional campaign management firms are in the South right now working on these elections? Do you know, have any idea?
Working, yeah. George Young and Associates. Well, of course, Ed DeBolt with Reuben Donnelly is to some degree there. Lou Kitchens out of Atlanta, working the Edwards campaign in South Carolina and helping the George Lankford campaign, the Georgia governor's race. Let's see, who else? George Young talked to John Harris Jones. I'm not sure whether Jones has hired anybody or not. Of course, Brad Hayes is operating in North Carolina. He was with Roy Fouch once upon a time. That's about it, I think. Because DMI is doing some polling. And Jim Mack has been contacted on some campaigns, I don't know which.
Does he have a firm in North Carolina, or is he just there for the Stevens campaign?
No, I think he's operating as a firm out of there. That's my impression. I haven't seen Brad in about a year or so, but that was his intention. He did the mixed drink referendum this past year also. So I think he's operating as a firm itself. I'm trying to think. Seems to me that maybe I may be overlooking campaign, but I can't think right now. But the problem is, in all those firms mentioned, except for Hayes and Lou Kitchens out of Atlanta, you know, all of them are from someplace else. And the South needs its own operation. And there's not enough warm bodies. We got three of those top races. Don't have anybody in there to run the thing on a day-in, day-out basis that has any real political training. Of course, the committee tried to overcome that this year. They had a contractor with DMI and George Young and
Paul Newman and and Habush TV Productions, and had a one-week campaign management college in Los Angeles. And I sent everybody I could find out there, but they carried 10 people in a session, trained, I think, 150 campaign management types to be involved in campaigns this year. That'll help us, but it's a start. It's not a total answer, but it's a start.
Do most of the states have a single large? I'm sure they don't. But how frequently is there sort of one or two really large financial contributors to the party?
You mean like Stetson Coleman in Virginia?
Yeah, or Roger Billiken in South Carolina.
Well, there's not a single large one in Georgia, and I haven't been involved with having to raise money enough in the other areas to really know, because it's not something people generally admit even to themselves. I don't think. I think it's probably far more broadly based in Georgia, because it's geographically centralized. Almost all of it comes out of Atlanta, because that's where most of the money in Georgia is. Well, there are a few very heavy contributors in Georgia. But as far as a Stetson Coleman or Roger Milliken, the person you can go to when you really get your back against the wall and you need $100,000, $200,000 it was in 72. I don't know anybody not like that available in the other states. Maybe, but I just don't know.
What do you see?
Anything we've missed?
I want to ask him one thing, and that is, you know, what do you project in so far the state legislative gains in these states?
Well,
gains or losses, be objective.
It's hard to say. I think any increase likely this year, because here again, I think legislative races probably reflect things that can happen late in the campaign more than something like congressional and gubernatorial race. I'm not aware of any situation where I think we're going to have any net loss in the legislature. I think reapportionment generally is tending to help us. South Carolina, of course, we're still trying to decide. I know they have one candidate over there, an excellent candidate, they reapportioned out of a job. They may have gotten some more. I've got a feel overall political climate in South Carolina is such that the Republicans have got to gain in the House, unless they just don't run candidates. And that this year they've done very good in the candidate recruitment that I've seen. They've had certainly numbers has not been the problem. But in Georgia, we've got a long way to go, so I would guess the chances are just statistically likely that we'll increase here. But a real bad governor's race. It could always hurt us, I suppose. You know, if Lester Maddox suddenly caught on, like Lester Maddox thought he would 4 years ago, it could be, it could really be damaging, I guess.
But overall, you expect to be gaining, picking up strength in the state legislatures in all these states this year? All the states, at least, that have elections?
Yeah, even in Alabama. Now, Louisiana, that really bothers me.
Thank you.
I'm not sure what we'll end up with down there. I think we've got two Republicans down there.
North Carolina is not in your area.
I don't. If we're going to lose anything, might lose Charlie Lancaster and the fellow from Baton Rouge and Louisiana. That's always a possibility.
What effect is Watergate having
down here? Well, I think the biggest effect has been. Been two primarily, I guess. One was not just Watergate per se, but all that has surrounded it.
Well, I'm Watergate in the broad sense.
It hurt candidate recruitment. It also has hurt in terms of the big contributor. People are going to be a lot less, you're probably going to have double dipping in some of these states, where they give to on both sides. And so if they're going to be reported, they've got no advantage in giving. They probably use it. Trouble this year is an excuse not to give at all. In Virginia, there was massive voter apathy. Volunteer apathy up there. But not just ours, theirs as well. And I think there'll be a lot of people who won't take part just because they're, you know, Watergate is bothering them one way, reason or another. Of course, as I say, the nature of politics down here is such that the moral implications, whatever they may be in terms of Watergate, are lessened. You know, that joked about last spring, most of the folks down here, I know in South Georgia, are sitting around waiting for the scandal to break. One of the few men interviewed by U.S. News and World Report said, we've been living under Herman Talmadge for 25 years. He hadn't seen anything yet. He broke into the state capitol and took power as governor. Read that story. There are people who are totally honest in any other way who will steal your eye teeth out in an election down here. Callaway campaign against Lester Maddox, who supposedly is a non-sophisticated, clean-type candidate, found two bugs that year, supposedly. I'm convinced we were infiltrated. In fact, I think the state Democrat chairman, as much as admitted they put spies in our campaign in the Senate race in 1972, probably did. Feel sure they did. They just play a little rougher down here in that regard than Virginia. You know, I'm constantly appalled in Virginia. I have to be very careful up there because they're such gentlemen. They don't even like calling the other side names. Down here, you're supposed to call the other side names.
Do you know Texas at all?
Mm-mm. No, I can't help you there. Don't know what they've got going.
How about in Tennessee, just as far as people who are really knowledgeable?
I'd start with Ron Riedorf and go from him.
How do you spell it?
Riedorf, I think.
I've got it.
He's where, in Nashville?
Mm-hmm. Somewhere around here.
One more thing, and that is this. The development of the Republican Party in terms of a genuine political party organization in these southern states, what effect is that having in the Democratic Party?
Well, I think ultimately they will get be organized more in a part of, well, I'm sure they are now, more so than they were 10 years ago when the Republican thing really began. Your competition does that. I understand they brought a new executive director into the Georgia Democrat Party. He read some of the back clippings here and said, my God, we're about to be swamped. Republicans got us out-organized at every turn. Well, on paper, we probably have. But I think probably someone coming in from a state that has a real party organization came in to take over one of the Democrat parties as a hired staff member, probably be appalled. I mean, it just doesn't operate like the real party organization does in terms of formal staffing and all that business.
End interview, no more transcription, this tape.